Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Sigma Show, episode 123. I'm your host, Sigma. Just before I let you know who is joining me this week, real quick, we'll go over what our topics will be. First up, if you heard that Warner Bros. Was up to more BS, you were right. They tried to cancel the Coyote versus Acme movie for tax reasons. They were basically going to not release it and then claim whatever tax write-off they can get for it. People got pissed, and so they're now allowing it to be shopped around to other outlets. And then the government said, maybe we should look into this garbage practice, which I always think is interesting when a government gets involved into media business. So that'll be our first topic. But following that, Jeff Keighley has released all of the nominations for the Game Awards this year. As usual, people have differences of opinion as to what was nominated, what wasn't nominated. And in a year like 2023, which has had so many fantastic releases, I think this is an amazing thing to like jump down a rabbit hole of, especially this year. So here with me to talk about such things, Rexicon Jesse.
Oh, that's me. Hey, everybody.
Omar Ahmed.
Howdy do.
And Yokina Cat.
Hey, y'all.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here. I see you guys in chat. Welcome to another episode of Sigma Show. Let's jump right in, shall we? We tend to start things with a what you've been playing, what you've been doing, what you've been watching. We will keep this short, though, because one, we have a hard out today. We're going to close up shop at 12 on the dot because folks have places to be. So I'm going to ask if you can keep it to like maybe one or two things from either category before we move on to our topics proper. Okay, does anybody want to jump right in and get their show and tell?
Real quick.
The names are wrong, says Real Honey.
Yeah, our identity, all of our identities are.
How did that happen?
Oh, no.
I thought it was right.
I am never first in the lineup. Discord puts our cameras in alphabetical order. I'm almost never first. I don't know how this happened. Like, R comes before S.
But I'm usually on the other side.
Yeah, I don't know how this happened. This has never happened. Discord is doing something
brand new.
I'm Yokina
Cat, finally.
All right, so while I fix this, somebody can go right ahead and jump into their what you've been playing.
I mean, I'll be very short and sweet about this. Yeah, as you know, things have been crazy in my life and the lives of the people around us. So I haven't had time to play much of anything at all. I did watch this movie Ambulance, though, from Michael Bay last week, which is phenomenal.
How old is that? That's not that old, right?
No, that's last year.
That was just last year, right?
Yeah, that's the Jake Gyllenhaal movie. And the dude from the remake of Sandman. The dude from the remake of Sandman.
Doctor from the Watchmen remake.
Oh, yes, yeah. He was also Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen.
Yaya. No, not that guy.
I have no idea what his name is, but he's a great actor. But regardless, this movie is hilarious. It's stupid. It's Michael Bay. And also incredible drone shots. Yeah.
All right, nice.
Yeah.
I accidentally watched the first Transformers movie, which is another Michael Bay classic. And I have to say, yeah, I was in the gym. It was playing on a TV. So like, my eyes were focused on it.
Excuses.
Wow. The thing is like,
that movie's dope.
Yeah. That's actually the only good Transformers movie. Like, I honestly feel that way. Like everything else from him in that franchise is trash. But the first movie is very watchable.
That movie, I mean, and all Michael Bay movies, they're inherently trashy. Like anything with Megan Fox is so exploitative. And also, like, oh man, the second one I'm thinking of now with like the two robot, like the two comic relief Transformer.
Yeah.
It is. It's kind of
it's pretty bad. King's Dad says Yahya Abdul Mateen. That's his full name.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Yes, John, we wanted the racist robots. Yes. That is what we refer to.
We are referring to the racist robots.
There's racist robots in Transformers?
In the second Transformers movie, yes. The first one does have a stereotypically, like...
It's the Hispanic... I know exactly which ones you're talking about. The second one, right?
Yeah.
Those two Hispanic cars. Yeah, all right. Let's continue.
Ooh,
all right, sorry.
There's also a good... like a wrecking ball testicle gag in that's burned in my memory forever.
Yeah.
What?
That one is pretty wild that they said they decided that they were going to do that.
There's some choices. There's some peak choices in Transformers movies.
My goodness. But okay, is that all for what you've been watching?
Literally.
That's fine. That works.
Yeah, the rest is I am currently technically unemployed, but I am busy as hell.
Right. We all know that story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else want to go next?
Sure, I'll go.
Go right ahead.
As y'all know, it's the same for me too, so I'll probably be pretty short. Tekken. I am now 9 ranks away from Tekken Gods.
Oh my god, really? Kat.
Hang on. What for the casual plebs, what is a Tekken God? I mean, it sounds very prestigious and good.
Okay, so like you have in Tekken you start with on first dawn, which is like the first rank, and then the highest rank is actually Tekken God Omega. But it's just basically like your ranking system, kind of like Apex. Okay. If you play like Apex or any other type of game that involves like a ranking system, this is a ranking system in Tekken. So my goal is just to get to the first level of like the Tekken Gods, which is just Tekken God by itself. But I'm now 9 ranks away. So I never thought I'd get this far. But I said, you know what? I've only dedicated myself to playing when I do have time to play. I only really play Tekken. So
I mean, that's how you do it, right? You hyperfix it.
Yeah, really. So it's been Casey sitting in the Discord, some of the videos I've posted and some other things. So it's I'm excited, and I've signed up on the esports website for Tekken 8. So I'm going to start competing next year, hopefully.
Yes, I can't wait.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Cool. I'm sure I'll lose. That's just part of it, right?
I don't believe it.
I'm really excited. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. And then as far as watching, I've been just really into, like, documentaries, like true crime documentaries. Lately, well, mm-hmm. No, that's pretty much all the time, but that's mainly what I've been watching. But I watched one, it's on Showtime. You can see it on Showtime or Amazon Prime, but it's called Outcry. Y'all have to watch it.
No.
You have to, yeah, it's called Outcry. It's about a high school student who was wrongly convicted of something. Like, it's crazy. Because in the beginning of it, you're like, oh, bro definitely did what they said he did. And then by like the third episode, you're like, you feel like you're in the jury box. Like, it's like, whoa, like, you don't know what to believe. And then there's also another one that I want to watch. It's actually about Jared from Subway.
Oh, damn.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a 4-part mini docuseries. Yeah, so I want to watch that one, too. But that's pretty much all I've been... Casey, that's pretty much all I do. Like, I deal with that stuff every day at work. But, yes, I do watch true crime stuff.
I mean, if you do what you love, then you're never actually working, right? That's what they say.
Right,
something along those lines.
Yeah,
you're talking about crime. That.
It's not true, though. Crime. You crime every day.
So. Yeah. I mean, if you love crime, is it really a job?
Hey, and I say this all the time, like, bad people keep me employed. So.
Yeah, I mean, somebody got to deal with them.
You know, we obviously our job is to, you know, make sure that, you know, we prosecute people, but. They keep me employed, so it's like a double-edged sword, I guess, if that makes any sense.
So we
like,
need more people committing more crimes.
No, we do not need more people committing crimes. And
I got you.
I do not prosecute people. Mm-hmm. I assist people who prosecute people. So,
right.
So I mean, it's just good for business. That's all. It's fine. It is, you can say it.
But that's pretty much what I've been doing. Yeah.
All right, cool. Jesse, do you want to go next?
Sure. I don't know if you know this, Casey. You know EA made a Dante's Inferno movie based on their version of the game?
It was animated, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember this. Did I watch it? I'm not sure. Did you watch it recently?
I did watch it recently. I watched it last week.
Okay, so how was it?
Surprisingly enjoyable. Like,
I mean, that's what the game was.
Right.
When we actually played it.
And it was very close in a lot of ways to the movie. First of all, it was animated, and there was like 3 or 4 different directors. So each section of the movie.
Oh, it's like an Animatrix kind of thing.
Yeah, but it was just a straight through hell story rather than Animatrix, where it's like, here's a self-contained story. Yeah, yeah. It was his story from going to hell to escaping hell. But there's like about 4 different art styles within that. with like I think a different director in each one.
Ooh, okay, so it's more like the thing where people recreated Shrek like 5 seconds at a time.
I've not heard of this.
You've never heard of
it? No. Yeah, it's like, I have not either.
I think this was a thing at Shrek Fest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right, yeah, Jack told us a lot about Shrek Fest.
Hold on. There's a Shrek Fest?
Sorry to derail this with Shrek, but yeah, there is a Shrek Festival in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
It's as cursed as you might imagine.
They celebrate Shrek. They probably burn Shrek in effigy, I don't know. But
that is ridiculous.
Yeah. But yeah, a bunch of different like filmmakers recreate like took 5 second chunks of Shrek and stitched them together into the full movie.
Please send me like the latest link of this that you can find.
Yeah. Okay, I'll dig it up.
That actually sounds fascinating.
All right. Go on, Jesse. I'm very sorry.
No, I don't know if I can dedicate enough of brain space to watch the whole thing, but I absolutely want to at least start watching that. That sounds wild.
Breakfast. This requires further investigation offline. So thank you for that.
Yeah. But yeah, okay, so it's several different art styles. Yeah, it follows the story mostly correctly. There's a few things that we're like, is baby shooting out of mouth nipples going to be in this movie? And the answer was no.
Oh,
but
darn it.
It did have some other real wild stuff that we were like, this is in the game? And so that was
darn.
It. So, yeah.
No, that was something Jesse and I were actually very impressed by, is like how insanely disturbing they were able to get the visuals in that game. Like stuff was very, very off and very, and that seems, I mean, that's part of it, right? You're in hell. It's like the worst place you could ever be.
Right.
So like,
you're
please,
supposed to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they did a really good job. Like the art direction and like the animators and everything in that game, like they knocked it out of the park.
They really
their
did.
Design. So it was cool to see some of those, in a different visual style in, you know, like 2D animation art. And then they added some new stuff that was kind of neat and some stuff that was like, okay, sure. And it was cool to see the different art styles. It was kind of weird because there was like one or two of the art styles where they didn't really know how to draw people, but they could draw monsters really well. So like hell itself looked great. And then there was Dante and Virgil, which kind of looked like a child's recreation of a JoJo character. It just didn't quite work. But ultimately, it was kind of fun. It moved super quickly. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd enjoy it on a second viewing because most of it was just visual. But like, I mean, hey, it was still cool. Like, props to the people that made it.
Yeah, like back during that time, EA would actually do that a lot. Like, they had an animated thing for like the Dead Space series, Mass Effect,
Dragon, Dragon Age, and I will say another reason pleasantly enjoyable, I will say, is because we did watch the Dragon Age and some of the Dead Space ones, and those were terrible, like unsalvageably
bad. No.
Like, the Dead Space thing I watched, I remember liking, and I had not played any of the games, but I don't know if there were more than one or if there was just the one.
There's
but
at least two.
Two.
I've seen one.
All right. The Dead Space thing I watched, I remember being like, oh, this is actually a pretty interesting story and setting and stuff. So maybe we saw opposite ones. Maybe we didn't.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just different opinions. That's how life works sometimes.
This is true. All right. Does that wrap it up for what you've been watching, or you got some stuff that you've been playing?
Probably been playing stuff. I don't know. You played RoboCop.
I did not. No, I sat with Nick.
Nick played RoboCop. Yeah. Okay. That was my one of my last two reviews,
which is now
no longer available.
Yeah, they just wiped them from the internet.
Yeah. So I had a review of that game, and I was curious what you thought of it. But all right.
I mean, it looks cool from what I could tell, but like, I don't know how it feels. Like Nick said, it was like tank controls. You said the same thing, I think, in your review.
Yeah.
So like, that's an interesting way to go for a first person shooter.
Yeah, which I'll real quick summary. I like that it was tank controls. I feel like the game wasn't built well around tank controls. You feel real cool and powerful at the beginning, then the game keeps going, and you're just like, I guess I'll just walk towards this guy and get shot while I shoot at him. And there's like a few things to kind of spice that up, but it's not nearly.
So I'm guessing you're like super bullet spongy.
Yes, but not as bullet spongy as your enemies, which is the biggest complaint I had.
Yeah, that seems like a difference. I'm a big RoboCop fan. Well, the first one and
the first one is okay, like, yes, I watched the first RoboCop as a whole ass adult. Like, I had never seen it. In my 20s, being like, what was this weird action movie that everybody's like, complain? It's one of those classics that I generally didn't want to watch, kind of like Ghostbusters or Jaws, where it's like, I don't want to not like it after I see it. And then I have to deal with everybody. That one was outstanding, incredibly scathing. Social commentary.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It on is, capitalism and like privatization.
The Paul Verhoeven thing, like with Starship Troopers, where it's like very obvious, very blatant.
Doing my part.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like. I made that comparison while Nick was playing and didn't realize that it was the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly didn't know either, and I love Starship Troopers.
Yeah, that's a great movie too.
It is. All right, with that.
Okay, I'm showing our age.
I'm not ashamed of how old I am.
Dang, Animatrix.
I still have that DVD. Not Blu-ray, not 4K. Not Blu-ray. I still have that DVD.
The Animatrix one that looked. Yeah, my brother does.
Did that one actually, back when they had DVDs at interactive menus, was that a thing?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. That's a lost art.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Like cases and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The real lost art is the DVD, the in DVD menu game. Like, I remember it in the Haunted Mansion DVD and the Pirates of the Caribbean 2 DVD.
CDs used to do that sort of stuff too. Like, it was a music CD, but if you put it in your computer, it would have like a DVD-esque interactive menu.
Yeah,
it would have like, oh, here's a music video, here's some behind the scenes stuff. Like, I used to love that. It's
Let's take it a step further. Let's bring back demo discs for consoles, man. I'm telling you.
Yes.
To loop it around, there were DVDs that had video game demos on them. Like, I can't remember what movie, but it was like, if you shove this in an Xbox, you can play Halo Reach or whatever.
Nick the OG says, in the Superbad DVD menu, Michael Cera is dancing, and apparently it doesn't loop for like an hour. Seriously? Michael Cera legit just dances for an hour.
There you go.
Interesting.
Got stamina.
All right. Yep. If that that wraps things up for you, Jesse, I can be quick as well. I have not really played anything that I feel compelled to like talk about. I did finish Dusant, which is great, but like most of my thoughts on that are on the stream that we did.
Yeah, I saw you playing that, and I was like, I want to ask.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good game. I wish there was a little more to it, but it's a good experience. Mm.
Is it a hidden gem?
You know what? I'm not sure we can legally call it that or not yet.
What was the one Simple Simon gave me?
Curio Obscurio.
Yeah, that was it. Is it a Curio Obscurio?
I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Well, is it?
Yes. We'll say yes. It's Curio Obscurio. Okay. We'll give it that much. But outside of that, I've been watching a lot of animated content. I finished Pluto not that long ago. I was much stronger on it at the start than at the finish, because like as the mystery of what's going on gets revealed, the justification is kind of basic. So like it didn't hold me as well, and I was already kind of annoyed at the fact that show vehemently ignores action scenes. Like it goes out of its way to displace where the action is so that they don't have to animate it. And that just feels really cheap to me. Like you have the setup for like very powerful enemies who have, you know, interesting abilities. And then when they face off, you just don't show me any of it. Like that, I did not like that much at all. But overall, the plot is good. Like I like the world and the setting and stuff. So I would still very much recommend it, but just go in there knowing that you're not going to get like a high octane anime. This is much more methodical and thought provoking, and it wants you to like think about like the nature of like humanity and like the soul, like robots that have true artificial intelligence, basically being as human as humans, stuff like that, which I'm fully on board with. Like I love that sort of philosophical thinking. Also, I watched and finished Blue Eyed Samurai, which is honestly the best animated thing I have seen all year. Like it is so freaking good. Like it was giving me like the Raid Redemption vibes in the way like it choreographs its action. Like, its set pieces are so over the top and like thrilling. And like,
you just
the way
did something to Jessica just now.
You're like, I'm gonna leave the stream and go watch it.
Like you have to watch this movie if you're a fan of anything like that. Like, The Raid Redemption is probably one of the best action movies ever made. Like, Blue Eye Samurai is matching that level of just insanity in terms of like what is being pulled off. And the fact that it's animated, people, this has been a thing that I think has been addressed for a while now, but folks kind of don't like when their anime is CG. Like, Blue Eye Samurai is a CG animated thing. But like, it adopts an art style that hides that. Like, it is very hard to actually tell frame to frame that it's like a, I mean, you can tell it's a 3D thing, but it doesn't look like how you would expect a 3D thing to look. Like, it's very painterly and artistically focused and whatnot. And I really love that. Yes, and I really love that a lot of like 3D anime or animation in general has gone that route. Like, since Spider-Verse, really, they decided like, oh, we don't have to all look like Disney Pixar with this. Like, we can actually start to expand out and like try new things. And like, the stuff that's been coming out since has been really, really good. And Blue Eye Samurai takes advantage of that in great order. Like, so that's like visuals and action and stuff. Its story is probably the weakest point, but it's not weak in the sense that it's bad. It's just some of its situations are a little bit contrived. It's like two characters will run into each other and it's like, how on earth did you find one another in this particular situation? Like, it's because plot, right? Like, they needed to find each other in that situation. All of that is very forgivable. It's got good intrigue, good characters that are both likable and unlikable. Like, even your main character has like traits and stuff that you're like annoyed by, but then like you're rooting for them because they're honestly just cool. Like, you're like, oh, I want to see what they do with their ambition. But also you can judge them for like the decisions that they make, because they're not always, you know, altruistic and stuff. So like, very complex characters, an interesting complex narrative that is only just getting started. Like, it ends on like a very big cliffhanger. So that show better get a season 2, because it is nowhere near finished in terms of what the story is telling. Excuse me. But I loved it. I really, really loved it. It put me on a serious high that like, I don't know where I can go to like continue to experience what Blue Eye Samurai was giving me. So naturally, after finishing that, I jumped straight to Scott Pilgrim versus the World, because that's one of my favorite properties ever. Yeah, and that came out this past Friday. I'm on episode 3 or 4, and I don't want to spoil anything, but Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I'm sorry, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is the name of this series. I do not want to spoil anything, but it is so worth the watch. Like, if you're fearful that you know this story already, or that, like, even if you read the manga, which has a slightly expanded version of the movie story, this is something that you need to watch. Like, this.
So for, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm no,
sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
So would you say for people who are really big fans of just the Scott Pilgrim universe, they'll be happy with the way that this is being like presented to them?
Yes. For a reason that I cannot really get into.
But
you need to watch this show. Like, please don't go in there thinking like, oh, they're gonna mess it up because it's another adaptation. No, this started as an animated thing. Like, it's in Brian Lee O'Malley's art style. All the movie cast came back, so it's like it's a perfect fusion of the two mediums that this thing has like come into popular media from. Mm-hmm. And like it works. And the biggest difference, which I actually am in love with, is because like Edgar Wright's movie style, he's the one who directed the movie adaptation, right? He fit pretty much all of the big important points from the graphic novel into that movie. And he did that with just super fast cuts and super fast exposition. Like, it's very kinetic, that movie, and I love that about it. Like, it's very hyperactive. But this show, being that it has a little bit more time, it really adopts the actual, like, low-key, slacker culture downtime that's in between that hyperkinetic stuff. And that reminded me heavily of the Fooly Cooly series, or FLCL. Mm. Where it's, like, it's very, like, musical. Like, there's always music playing in the background. The characters, like, use music in, like, as weapons, essentially. Like, I didn't put it together before, but Scott Pilgrim and Fooly Cooly are essentially the same thing. Like, this is the Japanese version of, or the Canadian version of one another, right? Like, it's got very cool, very, demure? Is that the word I'm looking for? Like, they're, like, very low-key, low-energy, but, like, they're saying things that, like, you want to listen to. Like, and I'll say this much. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off dives much deeper into all of those fan-favorite, lovable characters that you just get, like, very tiny snippets of time with because of how fast the movie moves. You get a lot more time with a lot more of those other characters, and like it is amazing. Like, it is like they're having so much fun, you can tell, like diving into like these other characters, and like it actually hits. So I'm not finished with it yet, but I am enjoying it so much. Like, I cannot wait to talk to people about this show when like more time has passed. So I'll say that much. Metric comes back too. I'll say that. Metric and Emily Haynes, they do nice. Another song, or at least a little ditty in that first episode. And I love that so much because they're one of my favorite bands of all time. And I found them thanks to the movie. But that's it for me.
Cool. I have one thing. I can't believe I didn't say this. It just popped in my head. It's just real quick. I'm sorry, Casey.
No, go ahead.
The trailer for the live action Yu Yu Hakusho came out.
Oh, right. I wanted to ask you about this, actually.
Ooh. Yeah, so I watched the trailer. I am, if no one knows this, that's like my favorite anime of all time. Casey knows this. So it looks good. Like, it looks good. So I think this may be the first live action that I'll give a chance. I haven't watched Cowboy Bebop. I haven't watched, what was the other one?
One Piece.
Yeah, I haven't watched One Piece. So I'm excited.
Interesting.
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to see what it's like. So hopefully it's good. But yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I did think that trailer looked pretty awesome. On that note, the Avatar: The Last Airbender live action trailer dropped too, which we have not said anything about. I also think that looks really good. And you guys know me, like, animation is king. But like, as far as like a live action adaptation, like, that looks really good. The only thing is, the first teaser trailer for M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar movie also looked good.
Yes, and I remember, like, this happened right before I left for the Navy.
Mm.
The trailer dropped back in, like, 2010. And the way it was so beautifully done of him, like, airbending in an abandoned airbending.
Right, yeah. Airbending, and then, like, the Fire Nation, like, pulling candles up on those ships.
Yes, it was such a beautiful, like, trailer that I was, like, the trailer did not match the movie
at all. What, such an okie doke.
They pulled an okie doke on us. So I'm with this one, I'm just gonna be like, okay. It may be, I wasn't really impressed with the trailer, so maybe it'll be like the opposite. It's just a really good series, so I might give that one a chance too. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it. I said it in our Discord when we brought this up, but I still feel like I would have preferred just more Avatar. Like, give me a third series with the continuity moving forward. Like, I'd take that over a live-action adaptation. But they, like, forever ago, they announced that they were opening a bunch of animated studios, that they were going to do, like prequel movies and then, like, another, like, sequel movie about some other situation. So I don't know if that's still happening. I can't even remember if that was pre-COVID or not when that was announced. But hopefully that's still a thing that's coming in the future. But we can go ahead and move on to our first topic proper, which is still in the world of animation, funnily enough. Coyote versus Acme. This is a movie starring Warner Bros.' Wile E. Coyote, where he essentially, it's kind of a mix of real world and cartoon. And essentially, because, as you all know, the Acme Corporation items that he buys to try and cast a Roadrunner fail him continuously, like, that's the running joke of the series, he's actually filing a lawsuit against them because, you know, their stuff doesn't work, which makes sense. That's what you would do in the real world, right? So that's the premise of this. It's a court case where Coyote's suing Acme Corporation. But this movie was shelved by Warner Brothers in order to write it off as a tax write-off, which is the same thing they did for the Batgirl movie that never saw the light of day, and Scoob, I think it was called. Yeah.
Holiday Haunt.
Seems
fishy at Warner Brothers. I'm just saying.
I mean, it seems douchey more than anything, where it's like they either don't believe that the movie will recoup the cost they spent on it, so you write it off as a loss where you don't actually release it, but because you spent all that money and you're a business, the government will recoup you. Like, that's like business law. That's something I learned from LLC Twitter, if anyone knows what that is. But it's also very scammy. It's scam feeling, but it's a legal thing. Like, you can legally do this because corporations are given all these weird privileges in tax law. And if you can take advantage of it, you can basically do this sort of scummy shit.
But we aren't.
Right.
Yeah.
People can't do that, but corporations can, right? So this essentially, because this movie apparently was screened by a couple of like Hollywood insiders with a voice, they called it out. They said, this is actually a really good movie. So they don't understand what the logic is in shelving it for this reason. It's almost as if it sets a very bad precedent, because the excuse for like Scoob and Batgirl was that maybe they're not good, that maybe they would not actually recoup the cost because of like how it was testing or screening. I mean, no one knows for sure, because at least the Batgirl movie wasn't actually even finished yet. Like, they still had post-production and stuff to do. But it was harder to make a case that they should just release it when they were in those states, and when they had that sort of perception. This was a finished product that people saw. It was testing high, and people had rave reviews for it. So to shelve this definitely rubbed a bunch of people the wrong way. When it came to the light that's what they were doing, they got a ton of backlash from a lot of Hollywood insiders, like other directors and whatnot, who were calling WB and basically canceling any meetings that they were having, because it's like, if they can do it for a movie like this, then what could stop them from doing it to my movie, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So WB reversed course. They were like, all right, we won't can it. We won't use a tax write-off. Instead, we'll shop it around to other outlets. So I think Amazon was interested. Netflix is interested. So we'll probably get to see this movie at some point. But this got the attention of a particular government official, Texas Rep. Joaquin Castro, essentially calls for the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission to look into any sort of violations that the studio may have committed by attempting to do this sort of thing, which I think is actually pretty freaking awesome. But I'm curious, knowing how companies function, especially like very big companies in the media, is there something that could be done to punish them for this? Or at the very least, is this the sort of thing that could deter them or other studios from doing the same thing? Could something come from this that stops this from happening going forward? Like, that's what I'm most curious about. And like, and maybe like, why this is such an attractive aspect of movie making for these companies as well. Like, to just use the tax write-off versus releasing the movie.
I fear saying anything too harsh, because that's the company that runs my my beautiful battle bots, and I don't want them to stop doing that.
I have very little confidence in the U.S. government actually pursuing any meaningful antitrust or, you know, anything in the realm of like anything punishing something that could be anti-competitive, blah, 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 blah.
That is a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were just talking about the Microsoft Activision merger, right? And I mean, there's just no indication that the government would actually like, you know, there's always going to be the one or two senators or whoever who investigates and like calls attention to these kinds of things, blasts them on X or whatever. But seeing it actually go anywhere, this economy, I don't know.
Okay.
I guess the interesting thing about all this is that it really just, it says the quiet part out loud, because you know that every single studio looks at movies this way. They look at it as a product that's making money, not as an art piece or, you know, something for the benefit of culture. Mm-hmm. And so, like, any studio would do this. Warner Brothers is just, like, the only one brazen enough to do it three times in a row.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, no, I think that's just, it's eye-opening because, yeah.
Like,
it is what it is.
I want to call attention to Lampy, who's pushing back on some of the information that we had. Says, I want to add some industry context for that movie. People keep saying the movie was done. That movie was far from done. To actually release the film would take much more work and potentially millions of dollars in costs to get it to a release date. The final cut is by no way done.
Yeah, I was reading in the article here that they had finished principal photography and had like a base edit done, but it wasn't a it wasn't ready to ship yet.
Okay.
I'm not really
similar to Batgirl.
When it comes to like when it comes to stuff like that, because I'm not that's not like the industry that I'm in, but it just makes me really curious as to like, you know, when you once you get to a certain point in producing something, like at what point do you realize like maybe this may not work out? Like you said, like it wasn't 100% done correct. So at what point you've done it three times in a row with three? So is there another issue at Warner Brothers? Like you've done it three times in a row with three separate films. So it's just kind of like.
There's a lot of issues at Warner Brothers.
Tell you right, like should I tell you, like is there a common denominator at that specifically in Warner Brothers that for the last three films y'all have done, y'all have canned them or shelved them or you know what I mean? Like
you know, there's been a consistent thing with what's the guy's name? Zaslav, is that a Warner Brothers?
David Zaslav.
Yeah, yeah. Just with how the Discovery merger went and how they're like they were, you know, reconfiguring HBO Max into just Max and changing their content lineup, cutting this, cutting that. Even like all their experiments with CNN, right? Like all these things, just they're scrambling because nothing is working. Streaming is dying. Streaming is like a failing medium in general, like conceptually for a lot of these studios because they're dumping so much money into it. And like if you put a movie out on streaming and like nobody's paying for it, you're not putting it in a theater, you're just like getting the subscription revenue that you know you would also be getting just by having friends or something like that broadcasting on your streaming service.
Yeah, if your streaming service isn't constantly growing like year over year, then like for a company that needs that constant growth in order to function for whatever reason, they need constant growth to function.
Yeah, but this is something like that
if at any point you plateau, then it stops being worth it for them.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, this is something that Darren's talked a lot about in his writing, just that streaming as an experiment, it was something that people put a ton of money into just with like wild hopes and dreams, but like the reality is that the market doesn't work that way. And you know, you're never gonna get it's never gonna be worth it to make an expensive movie for streaming. Or a show, for that matter, yeah. That's why you're seeing all these shows, like, do a season, half a season, and then get canceled, you know?
There was that one on Amazon Prime. What was it called? Sentient or it was like a futuristic, like, crime show. Apparently, they spent, like, $210 million on, like, the first season, and they canned it. Like, do you know which one I'm talking about?
Was that the one that had Priyanka Chopra in it?
I think so. Yeah, they were spending like $5 million per episode or something like that. And it
what
just,
was that like the Citadel or something?
Citadel. Yeah, Citadel. Yeah, and they like canned it after the first season.
Yeah, it seemed very generic. Where that was.
So, I was a big fan of that show 1899 on Netflix. I don't know if you guys heard of that one.
I'd heard of it. Yeah,
it was by the creators of Dark. Very much like a Lost mystery box kind of thing. And of course, it got canceled after the first season because I guess it didn't hit the markers that they were expecting from it. Mm-hmm. And this just happens all the time because, like, you know, it's really, you know, the artists be damned, the stories be damned. If it's not worth it, then they can just cut it.
Mm-hmm. And Nick OG in your comments had a really good point, Casey. He said the COVID quarantine streaming boom gave a false sense of viewership and popularity, which is a really good point. I think people are getting to the point where they want. It's the act of going to see a movie it's like a whole like thing. And I think people are starting to want to go back into going to a movie and going to dinner before or after. And just the whole act of it's a thing to do. So
yeah,
I think that's a really good point. Like, I think COVID gave these streaming platforms and these production companies this false, I guess, picture of what it's going to be, and it's not like that because people are going out more and doing things. And
this is the back and forth that we actually had on this show in the heat of COVID about like how all the theaters were shutting down and like everything was moving to like home streaming and whatnot, and whether that was the future. Like it was pretty contentious. Like I personally was like, I kind of like this better that I don't have to leave my house. And other folks were like,
Yeah.
And other folks were like, no, I want that experience back. Like, I want to leave. I want to. And honestly, it feels like that has been the case, honestly. Or maybe it is still split 50-50. But like, it does seem like theaters have begun to recover. Like, folks will leave their house and go to see movies that are only in theaters, especially if they're good movies. Like, Barbenheimer happened. That was a very big weekend for Hollywood. And, I mean, one was tied to, like, a very popular media thing. But it wasn't, like, a Marvel franchise, right? So, like, you can make a new movie and people will come out and see it, which was, like, some of the fear for some of these people. But that makes a ton of sense that the COVID situation boosted their numbers. Mm-hmm. But what doesn't make sense is how these companies don't register that. Like, they'll look at their numbers and say, oh, this can go on forever, and then ignore any of the factors that help. That Nintendo did the same thing with the Wii. It's just like, we had a hit on our hands. The fact that old people and people who don't play video games bought this isn't an anomaly. This is the new normal.
Yeah.
And then they ran into the Wii U, which kind of humbled them a little bit. Or did it? I don't know. I don't know if it did.
Something I'll say to that point. From my experience, my many, many years of experience working in corporate media, which I won't be able to talk about too much, but, you know, from what I gleaned, especially in the past year or so, corporate brain works in quarters. And so what's happening and what you're setting right now is what's going to happen in perpetuity until it doesn't, you know, until the numbers reflect that things are in dire straits, things need to change. This isn't going to, you know, meet our expectations, blah, 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 and then pivot. But yeah, until that point, everything is hunky dory.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say, though, that that's having that? Because the government mind also works in quarters, but maybe on the other side of that, would you say that that's not wasteful?
Oh, like, no, it's extraordinarily wasteful.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's completely stupid. I don't want to make this sound like this is, these are the methods of a sane person, which, I mean, a corporation is the person, but like...
Like, you would think that, you know, these people are making millions and millions of dollars, and we're the consumers, and you would think, like, hey, like, we're losing in excess of, I guess that's the whole, what are we willing to lose and what's acceptable for us to continue to stay on this path? Or, please excuse me if I'm not making any sense, but that's, to me, it's like, oh, okay, we can lose about $70 to $100 million this year, but we can continue with the same plan that we're always continuing. In my mind, that's mind-boggling to me and crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess, like you said, you're like, yo, and you're like, no, yeah, this is definitely dumb. So, okay.
Yeah, it's like, this is stupid.
They're not, like, it's not a group of people who are making decisions based on, like, the logic of the actual situation. They're looking at the analytics of the past. Like, at all times, like, they're never in the present. They're always looking at what happened and then trying, if, like, if it was a good thing that happened, then they were like, let's do what happened then and that will happen now.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the active situation around them is. And then vice versa. Like, even if the situation has changed around them, if what happened last time was bad, then they're going to adjust to that because they're just always in the past.
Yeah, there's two things that exist. There's growth and there's room for growth, you know? And so maybe, like, the room for growth is by shelving Coyote versus Acme. You know, maybe that's the calculation that David Zaslav and Warner Brothers are making. That if we don't release this movie, which, you know, would go on Max and potentially flop because, you know, they're not charging anything extra on Max for it. And they spent, you know, $70 million right now, potentially like $100 million by the time it's out, whatever. You know, maybe that was their calculus. But, you know, that's the corporate mind for you, I guess.
I'm trying to, what was, because this is how they work, right? Like, whether or not this movie is good is irrelevant. It's whether or not the last movie like this performed well. So, like, what was the last kind of Looney Tunes branded half cartoon, half real world thing that released? Was that like
Space Jam?
Space Jam 2.
Oh, shit, yeah, it might have been Space Jam.
Space Jam freaking 2, man. Algae Rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, yo, it was Space Jam.
But that was like, I would argue that was mostly cartoon. If they were doing a hybrid, like an actual, because it's, I noticed a few people compare it to Roger Rabbit, which I think is a, I love clear dividing lines in a style like that. I mean, that might have been like Looney Tunes back in action.
That was like,
okay, Ranger.
And that was 20 years ago.
That was a while ago. That was a big flop.
A long time ago. Yeah.
But like, either way, if they're comparing this to be like, okay, we have a Looney Tunes back in action, like, or we have a Space Jam 2, like, I don't think either of those did particularly well for them. Space Jam 2, wasn't that released to streaming stuff? Like, that was in the middle of all the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
HBO made that promise, like, oh, the next 20 films or whatnot we release are all just going to go to Max. But then they didn't make money from that.
I forgot. Enchanted was a half. It was like cartoonish, and
live action.
Yeah, which I love.
Enchanted's great.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Sorry.
Was that WB?
No, that would have been Disney. I think it was Disney.
Yeah, but it was really good. I liked it. Sorry, I digress.
No, it's fine. But yeah. They won't just look at their stuff. They'll look at other ones like it in the market too. So like, yeah, if all of that stuff wasn't like doing super big numbers, then like I can understand why their algorithm would tell them like, hey, this movie you have coming down the pipeline, like Lampy said, if it wasn't finished yet, it's like it's going to take X amount more money to finish, and based on the last couple of ones like it, it'll come out and make this much money, therefore don't spend that money and then take the tax write-off on this, and then you won't lose as much money as you're about to lose. But then like, now that there's a fervor around it, that number could change. Like, since there's interest, someone else will basically, well, I guess they still have to finish it, right? Before they can actually shop it to someone. Like, they can't shop it to someone and then that person pays to finish it, right? Like, it has to be a finished thing before they sell it.
There would probably be, hey, we'll split the costs of this and the profits of this.
Yeah, well, it's still a Warner Brothers production. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I imagine it would be finished under Warner Brothers and then sold as a product to whatever distributor. So Amazon Prime or whatever. Yeah.
So like they can be safe, I guess, if they charge a premium for this, because it is sort of a hot commodity now that they've made it controversial, right? Like people want to see this movie. So like,
yeah, maybe that was the plan. I don't know.
I mean, maybe. that seems very forward-thinking. Chess. I mean, this is what corporate world is, right? They stumble ass backwards into success all the time. Right. So it was probably a bad decision that ended up working in their favor for reasons.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. I thought this was a super interesting story because it really sucks that a company can do this to you. Like the guys who worked on this movie probably were like, yo, we had a really cool idea and we made a really great movie around that idea. Mm. Like in the confines of corporate BS. Like you're using Wile E. Coyote. Like this is a legacy character from one of the most popular franchise things in the world. And like they didn't even have enough faith in you to release your movie. They were gonna kill it and make sure no one ever saw it. Like that had to hurt when they thought that was the reality. So hopefully something is gonna be done by this government intervention that stops this from happening. But at the very least, a little more scrutiny is put into it so that folks have to make a better argument as to why they would try to do this if they are gonna do this. But like, it can't just be whenever the numbers tell you so, just kill people's movies, because that sucks a lot.
And I think this with the over like the last, obviously the last couple of months with the strike, this writer strike and the actor strike, being a consumer, I really did look, you know, I guess I researched or just read a lot on like what those two organizations were. And I think it's really like what you just said, like within the confines of like the business part of it or the corporate part of it, as an artist, as a creator of anything, whether it's video games, art, music, movies, that must be extremely frustrating to be limited in what you're allowed to do, controlled by people who don't know what, essentially really don't know what it is that you do. They just control the business in which you work in.
Exactly.
So I think it's heartbreaking as like, you know, I would rather, you know, someone put out something that's heartfelt and I put the literally blood, sweat and tears into, and like you say, for it to kind of just get shelved, that must be extremely frustrating for people who say, I just want to do my job, create, and I just want to get paid well for it, and that's literally all they want to do. So
and that's, that's the thing that makes those corporations money, is like, let the creatives be creative. And then when that stuff takes off, like you supported them, you get dividends on the back end and then everybody's happy. Yeah. But for some reason, the corporation is never happy because it's not enough.
It's never enough.
I guess I was reading on like the issues with, and honestly, this is kind of why I haven't seen it yet, but the issues with the second Spider-Man, the Spider-Verse movie, like how they were just working those animators to like the bone.
Yeah, apparently there's a lot of crunch in that movie.
Crunch on the so place. Like,
I mean, if you look at that movie, it looks like it. It looks like slave labor.
Yeah, they animated their asses off.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, right. So it's like I read on like stuff like that, and like you know some of the animators like would you know on Reddit and stuff like that. So I'm sorry, I'm just rambling, but it's heartbreaking to see that people you know that's their life's work or that's their passion, and they're kind of just put into a box because of people who don't know what they do on a day to day basis. So. Mm.
To make this a little worse, it is people that kind of know what they're doing because they know 3D artists don't have a union like a lot of 2D artists. Mm-hmm. So they literally make them bet against each other for the lowest possible amount to do their movie and then have in their contract that they're allowed to change what they want. And then they'll increase the workload and not increase pay. And that leads to a lot of crunch and a lot of extra work on the animator's side.
Yeah. No union VFX houses.
That's something that probably needs to change. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully, with the successes of like the recent writer strike and actor strike and whatnot, maybe they'll start to get on board with that sort of thing. Because like, especially the way the world's media works now, VFX artists are essential. Like they don't make anything without VFX. So like, they hold a tremendous amount of power. So like, somebody needs to do something to galvanize that group and say like, these are our terms and like treat us fairly and treat us right. Because like, the industry's in trouble if they all decide that they're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah,
yeah, what you were saying, it's in every movie and it's amazing to watch behind the scenes stuff and see how much like, you know, the Transformers and the whatever where it's like, oh yeah, this is clearly Optimus Prime's person, but like just the amount of like, oh, we need more waves on this water. Add that. Oh, we're not going to do a helicopter shot. Just like make New York and we need these buildings to be blown up and have this much traffic. Like there is a lot of stuff that is not at the forefront of what we're aware of and like background paintings and things. Like there's so much that they do.
Yeah. Yep. And that's why they outsource it cheap from other countries and from people that are like, you know, clawing for the jobs, for the contracts. You know, if VFX artists have a union, you're not going to have like 5,000, you know, names and a bunch of different companies in like the end of Avengers 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be tough because, like you said, they're so essential right now that like everybody's trying to do it. And the studios are not going to pay like a premium for it.
Yeah, it's going to take a massive amount of organization. So I just hope someone out there or some ones out there are trying, like they're at least trying to put something like that together because they need it. The world needs it.
The world. Yeah.
But on that note,
more worker protections.
Yes, please. And thank you. Mm. On that note, we're going to move on to our final topic here, which are the VGA nominations. So they have a lot of categories here. We won't dive into every single one. There's literally no time for that. So I guess we'll pick some of the big ones and just, I guess, go over kind of our thoughts on like what's nominated and kind of, I guess, just the year in general, if you're able to play some of the stuff that's come out. And so we don't miss it. Let's just start at the top. We have Game of the Year nominations. I'll read through what all was nominated. And I guess we'll just go real quick to see like what you guys feel like should be here, maybe what shouldn't be here, if anything. Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Marvel's Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. There are six games, all nominated for Game of the Year for 2023. How do you feel about this list? Good list?
I didn't play any of them.
You didn't play any of these?
I played a little Baldur's Gate. Say what? You and me? Is it you and me?
Rolo. He said that real low.
I'm a little embarrassed. Well, I
played two of these games.
Two, okay. Which two? Yeah. Which two?
I played Baldur's Gate and Resident Evil 4.
Okay. Nice. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I
have played Baldur's Gate, and I've played Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and I've played Tears of the Kingdom, but probably for the same amount of time, like 2 to 3 hours for each one of these.
Wow, that's good, huh?
I watched my boyfriend play Baldur's Gate because I don't have a PS5. Uh-huh. But it looks like a very beautiful game.
It's a great game.
And also, I've seen online that it's the quote-unquote, excuse my language, the horniest game of 2023, apparently, because of... I don't know why I've been reading that online. I don't get it. But then when I went to character creation, then I totally understood why.
Yeah.
It's the horniest game if you choose to approach it that way. And that's the freedom of RPGs.
Yeah.
And why Baldur's Gate is a great game.
I was like, all right, okay.
Like I'd read that people were calling it that because your companions are like very easy. Like you barely have to really initiate much or say the right thing to get them to want to have relations with you.
Isn't that like the RPG companion thing in general?
Kind of.
Sorry. You know, like the BioWare thing. I feel like everybody you choose the good option and, you know, conversations 5, 7, and 9.
But you do
nine,
at least need to choose the right options. Like you need to go down the path and do well on their loyalty mission or whatever.
Yeah.
And at the end, you're like, yes, I got it. But some folks were saying, I think, that certain characters, like the very second or third interaction, they're like flirting with you like super heavy. And it's like, where did this come from?
Dang, take me to get a pint of ale first. Gee whiz. Golly.
It's like the Olympic Village. What else are you going to do?
But yeah, so I've also not put a ton of time into any of the games listed here. I really want to play Alan Wake 2. Like I have that sitting downloaded and I want to start that because I was very curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like Resident Evil 4, like I was just never a Resident Evil fan. And I know this is a remake, but folks say like it's different enough, right? Like I know there was some debate about whether this should even be here since it was a game that existed already. But like folks are making a case that like it's different enough, right? Like you played it, Omar, right?
Yeah, no, I love the original Resident Evil 4. I think it's an incredible game, which is not a hot take at all. But
whoa.
I mean, I think the Resident Evil 4 remake is fantastic. I have not played the DLC. It retains the pacing of the original game, and the pacing was the best part of the original game. And so, you know, polishing that up with better controls, modernizing it, making it more fun in general with some like additional BS and like fetch quests, side missions, whatever. But, you know, that's beside the point. They just want to keep you playing the game longer. But yeah, no, I thought it was great. Game of the year. I haven't played enough of these to say, but I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair
side
enough.
Note. Did y'all see any of the mods that people were doing for Resident Evil 4?
No.
I'm sure they're horny.
The fact that Jesse is laughing makes me know that I think he knows what I'm talking about.
I have it, but I know the scene you're talking about, so I can't wait to hear what the mods are.
So, I'm sorry, I don't mean to derail you, Casey,
no, go but like right ahead.
Some of the mods are, they're putting... Leon, they're taking the cutscenes or like the gameplay and they're modding him into like waifu like type outfits. Like there's some where it's like he's like completely like in a thong and like over like his genital area it's like a little heart shaped, like it's like the craziest stuff. Or this one I didn't really like, but they've also modded Ashley where they made her like 300 pounds.
What?
Yes. Wow. Yes. They've modded her to be like she's a curvy girl. Cause I won't, she's a curvy girl. That's what I'll say. But yeah, look it up.
I might have to look this up.
Just look it up. But yeah, I thought it's just people's imaginations are very interesting, but concerning at the same time. So,
Honey Money in chat says, I've seen mods for Resident Evil 2 remake. And let me tell you, there are lots of mods where his dick is just out.
Yeah, that too. I was going to say it. Honey Money went there, but I wasn't going to say it. But yes, he is just completely just cheeks out, double cheeked up on a Thursday afternoon on Resident Evil 4. Yes.
Can you spin the camera around to the front? When you're,
I think so.
You know, can you?
Yeah, okay. It's like a yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't know if you rotate it every single time, and you're just staring at Leon's ass.
But, I mean, most of the time,
yeah,
you'd be looking at his cakes.
Wow.
Yeah, as somebody who plays a lot of Dead by Daylight, I find a surprising amount of Leon simps. So that makes a lot of sense why this mod community exists.
that's actually. Heartening in a weird way. but that the objectification is like equal opportunity.
Oh yeah, people have been thirsting after Leon for like 20 years.
I'm just waiting for, you know, equal opportunity fan service in Tekken, but you know, we've already had that discussion. If they're gonna have their boobs out and like that's extremely hurt, I think, painful while fighting, I need to see some men in some gray sweatpants. Okay, like,
I mean, let's do it, let's get the mock community.
I need the jiggle physics for that, okay? If we're going to have everything else, I need the jiggle physics for some gray sweatpants and a fade and some Nike slides. Can I get that, please?
I feel like that one guy, I forget his name, the kickboxer guy who has, like, the red hair. He's from Tekken 3. I can't remember his name.
Red hair.
He's like, whatever. Basically, that dude, yeah. I've been like,
D-Fox.
Yeah.
Eddie, like, Gordo. Look.
Mm-hmm. The jiggle some assless chaps.
Exactly. Thank you. Jesse knows what I'm talking about. So we're on the same page. All right.
There you go.
Okay. So last thing I guess I'll say on the list of Game of the Year noms. I do think Baldur's Gate 3 is probably going to win just the way it's been talked about in the industry since it came out. It didn't hit that hard for me, but I can see how much is in that game and like why people who are more into the sort of Western RPG style thing would get like totally sucked up into it. But the surprising thing for me is that Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is kind of skating on its laurels into this list. Like, I know that Zelda is a fantastic series. Like, I love the Legend of Zelda series, but I feel like Tears of the Kingdom does one really cool thing. And honestly, like, it's layered, because that one cool thing allows you to do a lot of other cool things in that game, but none of those things have much to do with the game itself. It's almost like they built a sandbox, like a Minecraft-like thing, but the rest of the game is kind of an afterthought. Like, the rest of the game is very much the same as the last one, which was great for a Zelda game. Like, it was novel that a Zelda game was doing all that, but as the second one, they need to bring this game into the modern era. Like, there's way too much menu-driven decision-making in what's supposed to be an action-adventure game in the Zelda series. Honestly, I don't think it looked good. Like, its art design is fine, but, like, it...
Like, actual gameplay, you're like, no.
Like the gameplay is frustrating because, like, I have to stop all the time. Like, I'd be so much more immersed in that world if I didn't have to go on my menu and select a different combination of food in order to heal myself. If I didn't have to go into my menu to change the weapon I was using or to switch from a melee weapon to a bow and arrow, or the arrow type that I'm using, like, you can do all this sort of mixing and matching of materials and weapons, but it always takes you into a paused menu in order to do that stuff, as opposed to like actively playing the game, which I don't understand why that has been ignored so much and talks about this to the point where it becomes a game of the year when there are so many other games that just don't play like this. So I'm going to go back to it at some point. I promise I'm going to play more Tears of the Kingdom. Maybe I'll even finish it. I finished the first, I finished Breath of the Wild. But I was very disappointed in how little actually changed.
I would make a case for it, game of the year being the correct category, in that, kind of what you were saying, where they did one thing really well, but the game was an after, like the gameplay kind of being an afterthought. But that one thing was what so many people thoroughly enjoyed. And that, yeah, so is it up for best narration or best story? No. Is it best for best looking? No. Is it but like just the experience of it. That a lot of people had so much fun with it that I could understand why that would be in the sort of catch-all of game of the year.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I'm just glad that Call of Duty wasn't nominated for best ongoing game. That was my only concern, and I'm happy that, right? I did not see it. But Apex Legends was, so in your face, Call of Duty players.
Speaking of best ongoing, Let's jump into that as our next topic here, because there was a bit of contention that Cyberpunk 2077 made it on this list as a nomination. I can see Jesse's face. Really? Why would Cyberpunk 2077 be, like, can anyone...
No, I would...
It's not better, but...
No, I would...
You agree that it should be on this list?
Yeah, for how much work they've been putting into it since its release, it does seem like, yes,
yeah,
that should count.
Yeah,
okay, like, there is DLC, but also all of the work they put into the base game.
Because remember how it was a cluster mess when it first came out, like Cyberpunk 2077.
Mm-hmm.
So it now, like all the work, what it is now, I think it deserves to be on Best Ongoing Game because of, like Jesse said, how much it's improved and how much, like...
Wasn't all that work they've been putting in basically fixes for what they didn't have at launch?
From what I understand, it's also a lot of gameplay and system pivots, you know, changing how the skill trees work, changing how different things work, and just like rebalancing the game in general, not just like bug fixes.
I mean, there were a lot of bug fixes, but yeah, like they did revamp a bunch of stuff before the actual Phantom Liberty DLC. But I'm curious if that counts, because like the term ongoing game is essentially like for live service games, right? Like that's kind of how that came about. Like a game that works in like seasons or that has sort of like a competitive slant so that there's always like maybe new maps or new weapons, like new content in general. So like, yes, Cyberpunk has been releasing new content. So like maybe that's why it clears that bar. Like that doesn't make sense if you look at it that way. But I don't know. It was tinged with the fact that like, they delivered something that was underbaked, and like it took them a long time to actually get to the thing that they had been promising from the start. So that's what makes you feel a little weird.
Well, the same thing happened with No Man's Sky, right? And I believe No Man's Sky was also nominated for Best Ongoing or whatever they called the category back then.
Yeah, I think it was like last year or a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess
for how much they changed, I feel like, again, that's a valid thing.
Has anybody here played Cyberpunk since the 2.0 update?
Yeah, I have. I've not made it into Phantom Liberty. Like, I actually started the game over and was playing just with the new skill tree and the new character and stuff. And I was enjoying it a lot more than my first playtime through it.
Okay. Yeah, so no, I've only played through it before the update. I had a pretty good time with it. I beat the game, but I thought that a lot of what was lacking was in the like character progression after a certain point, because it kind of had the Skyrim problem where, you know, you play enough Skyrim, you end up as a sneaky archer.
I mean, I started that game as a sneaky archer, and apparently I learned way afterwards that's the preferred way to play that game. Yeah. But that's just what I do.
Honestly, the best way to play that game.
I play all games as a sneaky archer if I can.
Yeah, I felt like a similar thing happened with Cyberpunk, where eventually you just become like this indestructible bullet sponge. You know, they can just take out anybody no matter what your build is. Stealth isn't really that big of a concern. But, I really enjoyed the world. I really enjoyed the characters and everything. And so, interested to go back to it and meet Idris Elba.
Yeah, I'm going to get that done at some point. I didn't realize this, but Final Fantasy... 14. Okay, I'm sorry. This guy looked like the guy... From 16.
Yeah.
But this is 14. Okay, so 14 is fine.
Are you trying to tell me that all Final Fantasy characters look the same?
Yes.
Because they kind of do.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other interesting categories here? Let's see what's in best.
One thing I thought was interesting. Sorry, Jesse, did you have something?
No, go ahead. I'll pick it up later. You go.
Okay. I think it's interesting that Baldur's Gate, it's nominated for a million things. It is not nominated for Best Indie Game, I believe.
Which it should not. 100% should not.
I think it should.
No.
Okay.
Why not?
I want to hear these arguments.
Yeah, yeah, because I feel like there is a very wibbly-wobbly distinction in gaming, and it's never clear what is and what isn't an indie game, because Baldur's Gate is an independently produced and independently distributed game. Like, they publish it themselves. It's all in-house. Mm-hmm. So why is that not an indie game?
Because I've done a little bit of following, because I like Larian Studios. Mm. They did the Divinity series and stuff. And, like, if this would have been a Divinity game, absolutely. I would 100% say, yes, it deserves to be.
Are you saying because it's licensed?
It is a licensed game.
Mm.
It is, and... On top of that, like, which, okay, argument back and forth on there. The much more important thing about this is the backing it has from Hasbro. Yes, they are the ones that produced it. They are the, like, hey, it's a Larian game, put it out. But following them along, they have been like, oh yeah, Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast have given us more money for this game than like the last three games we made combined. They funded them so much. Yeah, they put the ads out. They did the thing, but they could only do that because one of the largest toy companies in the world was just dumping a truckload of money on their laps so they could do that. So okay. I think it should not be an indie game.
That sounds
fair. Yeah, I can buy that argument. Yeah.
But then Dave the Diver apparently was funded by Nexon. So, how is that in this list then? Because I saw folks were making that argument.
Yeah, okay. I feel like there's a lot of indie games that have, you know, to some scale or another, a publisher or a backer of some sort. You know, maybe Baldur's Gate has, you know, the toy gods of Hasbro in their corner. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of companies that are just, like, funding independent games. You know, giving them, you know, even if it's, like, 10 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand. And so then, is it independent when you're taking other people's money?
Darwin's Dummy asks, depends on how much Nexon put in. Make it a budget category, not a publisher/producer category.
I think budget. I kind of agree. Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a definite line, but yeah, I think there is an amount, which then you're dealing with, well, Hasbro didn't give them that much. Hasbro only gave them 10,000, and then Wizards of the Coast gave them 10,000, and then this other branch of Hasbro gave them 10,000. That when really it's Hasbro giving them a total of 2 billion, but it wasn't.
I feel once you're looking into the books, though, like it's it's gonna be really wibbly wobbly to nail down what it, you're like. Right. Hey, let me look into your accounting before I can call you an indie game.
Yeah, I think no one cares enough about the definition to make that sort of play, right? Like Hasbro's not gonna say, in order to clear the bar for Jeff Keighley's Game Awards, we need to make 30 shell companies and give out this money in bits and pieces. Like, they're just gonna give the money. And then whether it qualifies as indie or not is somebody else's problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that should be it. If you have to be asked, let me see the books, you're no longer indie. Like, that's when someone cares enough, that's when you've crossed the threshold.
That's how they get you. That's how they get, like, Saudi prince money, and they just don't tell anybody about it. They're like, we're game of the year, or indie game of the year.
Yeah, if a Saudi prince gives you $10,000, do you still count as indie? Yeah.
If it's a personal friends and family donation.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we're right at the precipice of 12.
Oh, okay. So I want to say one thing about the nominations, if I can.
All right, go right ahead.
Please do.
I was looking back at some of the games I reviewed and played, and I do want to say the best narrative, like best story, best characters, that stuff. I was very sad to see that Star Trek Resurgence did not make it, because that game had an incredible story. And that's like on my list of game of the year story-driven stuff. Like the whole game, it's got a few issues. I'm not gonna pretend like it doesn't. But like, that was a compelling, enjoyable, fantastic story. And I am kind of sad to see it not listed anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't realize until going through this that there's no category for, like, best puzzle game.
Mm. I feel like there used to be, wasn't there?
I don't. I just naturally assumed that there would be, but there isn't. And, like, there were so many fantastic puzzle games. Like, Cocoon got nominated as a best indie, but, like... Mm-hmm. It should be up against other, like, really good puzzle games like Talos Principle and Humanity that both came out this year as well. But, like, Humanity is not anywhere on this list, as far as I can tell. I haven't...
That's true.
And Humanity is freaking fantastic.
I think it's in VR AR.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. Because, it has a VR mode, but, like, that has nothing to do with why that game is so awesome.
Well, it got something.
That's unfortunate. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got, or all we have time for with the Game Awards stuff. So we'll go down the line. Jesse, where can folks find you? What do you have coming up?
Rex on Jesse on the Twitch and the Twitter and the Blue Sky and the Reddit and the YouTube. And I'll be streaming tomorrow 11 a.m. and Tuesday 11 a.m. and Wednesday at 12 p.m. all that Eastern. Tomorrow I'll be doing more Evil Within 2 because I'm not sick of it yet. It's still surprisingly fun.
Nice.
Even though that story, not enjoyable. Gameplay, super fun though. It's good time. Right? So everybody come check it out if you want to. And if not, it's your life. You live with it however you want to.
Do what you want.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Omar, where can folks find you? What do you have coming up that they can check out?
Sure. You can find me, I guess, on Twitter, which I will probably be using more these days, at Mr. Yomarz, MryoMarz. And yeah, you can see what I'm doing next at Second Wind on YouTube.
Yeah.
So just keep an eye out on there.
Nice. Yokina Cat, where can folks find you? What do you have coming up?
They can find me on the Twitter, Instagram. Actually, PlayStation no longer allows you to post directly from your PS5 or PS4. Yes, I don't know if anyone else saw that. So thanks, Elon Musk.
It's 100% his fault.
PlayStation was like, yeah, we're not messing with that. So I am going to just be continuing. I'm hoping to reach, I don't think it's going to happen, but I at least want to get to the rank before Tekken God is Emperor. If you look up the Tekken 7 ranking system. So that's my goal before the end of the year. That will just require me to play like every single day, which I honestly, I'm going to have to make time for it. But you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and in the Open Party Discord in the FGC server. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you. And as always, you guys can find me at SigmaGears9 all over the internets. I mentioned it last week, but we are doing an ongoing kind of game here where if you guys can guess what I will name this episode before the podcast goes live on my my Twitter, you get a free game code. But also you can just enter for a random chance to get a game code if you rate the show on your podcast listening service and then just send me like a screenshot that you did so. Speaking of which, the person who won from last week, where's your name at?
Where is it?
Regular Joe. You'll be getting a code for TMNT Shredder's Revenge. So I'll be sending that to you via like Twitter DM at some point. So congratulations for the first winner of this contest. Every week, I'll like redo all the entries and whatnot. So make sure you get those entries in. Outside of that, the Open Party channel will be doing Super Smash Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Me and Jeff will be back running a King of the Hill style kind of just tournament. Not even a tournament. It's just if you're good and you stay at the top of the hill, everyone will be gunning to take you down. It's a lot of fun. We commentate the fights. The chat is lively. Jeff and I are a good hang. So come through. Hang out with us over there on that Twitch channel. And outside of that, I'm also doing stuff over on Second Wind. I've been on a couple of streams throughout the week. Hopefully you'll be seeing more of me as we kind of formulate what our streaming and video plans are going to be in the near future. But it's exciting times. Stuff that's happened over there is like blowing our minds. So come along for the ride. If you're not already subscribed over to the Second Wind Twitch channel or the Second Wind YouTube channel or the Twitter, do it. Join the Discord. There's lots of stuff happening all over the place. It's really exciting to see. So with that, I want to thank everybody in the chat for hanging out. This has been fun as always. Thanks to my three guests. This has been episode 123. We'll see you all next week. Take care. Peace.
Ooh, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Hey, oh, snap.
Bye, y'all.
Make a win.
Bye.